I woke up at about 5 o'clock on Saturday morning. We had been up, let's say, till midnight, easily, on Friday. And when I woke up on Saturday, I recorded some material, but I'm afraid to say that it is just unlistenable. I used a portable mic, and all you hear is a... Now, this used to be the mic that I recorded Nostrum on before I got my Blue Snowball. And I hate to imagine what those shows must sound like. Anyhow, the good news is, who listens anyhow, right? So, I recorded this thing on Friday, Saturday morning, and it was all about Friday. And for the life of me, I can't tell you what was in it, because I couldn't listen to it, much less ask you to listen to it. But I'll just recollect very quickly that Friday at Yale was the usual. And the usual boils down to, you get all the information in. I couldn't have had more accurate information than I did. And you start the tournament. Now there's 160 or so in two divisions. You start the tournament, and before you can say whatever it is that you can say very quickly, there is a line of people in tab with problems. And the amazing thing is the problems are always perceived as my problem. And I know that a lot of these really weren't my problem. As you know, if you were following the way I do things, I copy and paste out of the original registrations into Excel, and from Excel into TRPC. There is no intervention by me. So if you say your student's name is Joe Blow, I will put in your student's name as Joe Blow. If you say your student is Varsity, he'll be Varsity. If it's a JV, she'll be JV. If it's a he, it's a he. It's a she, it's a she. Whatever it is, I give you back what you put in because I haven't touched it. It's an automated process. It is remarkable how many people want to blame me for their, well, I think Big Daddy called it mendacity in Cat on a Hot Tin Roof, but I won't use that word because I'm a nice guy. Let's just call it, it's always the same people, tournament after tournament, over and over again. You're not listening to this, unfortunately, but if you were, you'd know who you are. Anyhow, all hell breaks loose when you start any tournament, and to start a tournament with 320 people in two divisions, you're talking serious hell, but manageable hell, I think. We got the rounds out. The first round was supposed to start at 5, and the reason it didn't start at 5 was because we didn't have all the people registered yet. But don't blame me for that, because I really wasn't flying the planes or driving the cars or conducting the trains or whatever that these people were taking to get there. And if people don't show up or come late, there isn't that much we can do. But we got the thing started around 5:15. Now, in debate time, the difference between 5 o'clock and 5:15 does not show on any measurement. So I think we're pretty good. We got the first round out, paired the second round, got the second round out about 8 o'clock, and that was pretty good. I think that's pretty good. We got all the ballots back at around 10:30, put them in, and got everything paired for the next day in the varsity division, but not the JV division, because the schedule was set up that we would have 4 rounds of varsity on Saturday, and in between the 4 rounds of varsity, we would have 3 rounds of JV. And that was fine. That made sense. Worked for us. Anyhow, let's skip to Saturday. So there's this whole song and dance about Friday, and there must have been all kinds of wonderful things that I would have related to you, but I'm going to be honest with you. The best day was Saturday. The best stories are Saturday. This is the podcast that I'm going to recommend people listen to about this tournament if they don't listen to any of the other podcasts, the other two introductory podcasts. Okay, Saturday is framed for me and Vaughn by a dinner reservation that I had made at a restaurant called Ibiza, I-B-I-Z-A. You probably have heard of Ibiza if you've ever taken a geography class or ever been to Spain or ever walked down the street in New Haven. It's a fairly fancy restaurant. I had been there before. I was really touting this place. And I got Chris Palmer organized to go with us and John Cruz. We were going to have a great meal. 8:30 reservation. So when we arrived at our destination Friday, Saturday morning for running the tournament, the one thought that we had in mind was, however we organized the day, we had to get out to a reservation at 8:30, even if this meant coming back later and doing the pairing. As a matter of fact, that was the expectation, that we would get the round that was scheduled at 8 o'clock at night. That was round 6 of varsity. It was scheduled at 8 o'clock at night. We would get that round out, get in the car, go over to Ibiza, have a dinner, come back as the ballots were coming in at around 10 o'clock. That was the plan, the expectation. Now, Saturday, like Friday, we had kids everywhere. I mean, Yale is a complicated place. I had rooms over here, rooms over there, and we got everybody into these various rooms. The further rooms were given to the varsity. We figured they were less likely to get lost. Maybe they had been there before. The rooms that were closer were given to the JVs on the assumption that they were really much more likely to disappear. But on Saturday, we had a building all to ourselves. It was a high school. Now, it was not close to Yale, and so there was a shuttle that had to bring people over. And of course, I had my car, so I just drove from the hotel. I got there, first round was at 8 o'clock. I got there about 7:15, and there were all kinds of kids unloading the cars and trucks or whatever for the concessions. All the pups were setting up concessions. I have never in my life seen more people more interested in concessions than these bull pups. Anyhow, they were arriving there. We got into the building, and like I say, it was a bit isolated. Got in there, and it was hard to really get a fix on the place. And Vaughn showed up a few minutes after I got there. And our first job after dumping stuff and just finding one room that was open and getting everybody from milling around. This is wonderful. So you get 5,000, well, 320 debaters and tell them go into this building that they've never been in before. They go through the door, and then they stop. They stop. There's nothing there. There's nothing there. There's no wonderful and welcoming atrium or something. It's just a little hallway with 320 people in it that don't move. So the first thing I said to them, like I said, I was the first adult to show up, and I use that term loosely. First thing I say is, okay, go down that way. Go wait in the cafeteria. And I pointed in the direction of, I had no idea what. I mean, I walked into the building, saw all these people, and just saw them go down there and to the cafeteria, because I figured, well, there's two possibilities. One was that there would be a cafeteria down there, and two was that they'd get out of here, get down there, and start looking for a cafeteria. Now, as it turned out, miraculously enough, there in fact was a cafeteria down there, so we got rid of them. And we got people, you know, to go someplace that they weren't bothering us. Anyhow, as I say, Joe showed up not too much later than I did, and we started scouting around. We got the pups to go, instead of setting up to sell Red Bull, to set up the room so that we could have a debate tournament. There was a sense of priority goof. I don't know what you want to call this, but our priority was having a debate tournament. And their priority was selling Red Bull. Now, I don't blame the actual pups in place. It was apparently the chief pups, or one chief pup who is like concession crazy. I never met the concession crazy pup, I don't think. Or if I did, he was never actually introduced to me as the concession crazy pup. But nonetheless, there was one. All the signs for the tournament, you get to the university, and instead of a sign saying registration here, there was a sign that said concessions there. Whatever. So anyhow, we got to a room. Joe found a good room for Tab on a hallway that worked really well. We had a set of rooms that was done where we just made up rooms. We knew we had enough rooms, but we didn't know what the names of the rooms are. You know, you go into these high schools sometimes and they have very strange names for the rooms. They're not just 101, 102 or something like that. They're all, you know, E42 divided by 8 and all this kind of stuff. So what we did was we told them, just make up signs. And the signs are going to go 201, 202, whatever. And then 301 to 321. And you're just going to paste these signs in whatever rooms we have. And they'll probably be on the same corridor, which they were. And people will just go in where the sign is. We tell them that, and that worked fine. So we got started. You know, we found a good tab room. We got all the signs on the doors. We had an unbelievably good team of pups with us. I was really happy with the people that were helping out. You may know who some of these people are. Jeff, who had run the tournament last year, who had been one of the tournament directors, was working with us. And a girl named Pam Brown was working with us at the table. And of course, the tournament directors came by every now and then. Tessa, who was one of them, came by, and she was great and helpful. And everybody was just doing a great job. We really had a great group, and hardworking, and whatever. This, of course, is separate from the concessions, but so it goes. Anyhow, we're in this building, and you know, we go through this thing. I'd walked around a little bit, and Joe had walked around a little bit, and I would like to take credit for this idea, but maybe it was mine and maybe it wasn't. I'm not really sure. It doesn't really matter, but we're sitting in this building, and it starts to occur to people that we are in a building roughly twice as big as the Pentagon. Now, Jeff was having a great relationship with the custodian. And I'm going to say, I've worked in a lot of schools, and including my own, and the one group of people who you need to work with you, and who usually will work with you, are the custodians. They tend to be a great group of people, very helpful, and this particular custodian was no different. He was incredibly helpful, opened any kind of doors that Jeff wanted, as helpful as can possibly be imagined. It started to occur to us, wait a minute, we have 40 rooms, but this building, probably we can eke out another 40 rooms. So instead of alternating the rounds, we can actually just have them pretty much at the same time. We sent Jeff out, he came back, he could do it, he could get another 40 rooms, whatever we needed. We could double the size of our room list. This was the most spectacular thing that could have happened to us. Now, we did run the first round at 8 o'clock, and then we got that second round going, but by then, we knew where we were. So, when we launched that second round, or maybe it might have been a little after this, I'm not quite sure of the timing, but certainly in the morning, we were able to announce, not that everybody was going to be there either till 8 o'clock or 10 o'clock, which probably translates as 9 o'clock or 11 o'clock in the way these things work. Even the way I work these things, it would still have been 8 o'clock and 10 o'clock. We were able to announce to people that our goal was to get everybody out of there by about 8 or 8:30. We were going to be able to run the rounds pretty much simultaneously. And as a matter of fact, we'd get the JV out 2 hours early. Instead of them having their last round at 6 o'clock, they would have their last round about 4 o'clock. And then, you know, they'd have to wait a little while. It was hard to get the buses that were going to shuttle them back to the campus to arrive on time. But, you know, they could cool their heels. They could go, you know, play poker or whatever it is that they do when they're cooling their heels. But it was certainly such a better situation. And everybody pretty much realized this right away. We had worked a miracle, but we hadn't really worked a miracle. I think it just dawned on us that we were living in a miracle, that we had the space to do it. And thanks to a custodian who was very, very helpful and agreeable, and to Jeff, who worked with him, and to our own great imaginations, we were able to just cut off unbelievable number of hours from this tournament. But that wasn't all of it, because what happened was, at some point along the line, we realized, in addition, that, wait a second, why don't we just have the doubles round of JV while they're still here? Because they're going to have to wait for this bus anyhow, and they're going to be here, the judges are here, everybody's here. So exactly that's what we did. So not only did we make the first announcement, but we made the second announcement a couple of hours later, after we really knew that we could do this, that we were able to pull this off and still get everybody out hours before they thought they would. And again, this was great. I mean, nobody complains when the tournament moves quicker and is easier for them. Well, I speak quickly. Nobody who knows anything complains about this. So I think we did a fantastic job of really adapting to the situation and moving things along. And Joe and I immediately put in the bid. We want this school next year, and we want this custodian next year. I assure you, we had a long and serious conversation with the pups, telling them, you have to reward this custodian handsomely. I mean, not to put too fine a point on it, but you know, Yale is not losing any money on this tournament, and to have a tournament that pleases the people that come to it is absolutely essential. And we had done that. And we've done that thanks to this one person in this one building. So these are going to be really high on the list of requirements for next year. But, of course, there are some people who demur from this kind of thinking. My highlights of the tournament are pretty much the kind of thing that happens a lot. Now, usually the actual happenings are different from one tournament to another, but the fact that these things happen, and anyone who has run a tournament will recognize this kind of thing, that these are the things that happen. So we have one woman comes up to us, and she's a judge, and I would imagine a parent judge. I can't imagine she was a coach. And she said, this is horrible. This is like being under house arrest. Now, her argument was that, well, it was twofold. First of all, we were in the middle of nowhere. There was nowhere to go. And she was going to be here forever. And second of all, there should be a shuttle so that she could go and, you know, do some shopping and get some food and stuff like that, so that she wouldn't be here, she could go back and forth. Now, at some point, somebody tried to explain to her that if, in fact, we allowed her to go back and forth, she'd be here even longer, because we wouldn't be able to find her, and we'd be waiting for her and the 100 other judges that we have. But better still is the fact that the person she came in, this is like being under house arrest, the person she said this to was my partner in the tap room, who is the kind of person you simply don't go up to and announce, this is like being under house arrest. And Joe responds to high dudgeon with what could only be described as low dudgeon, and I can't really explain it. You really have to know Mr. Vaughn for this, but let's put it simply. You just have to meet Mr. Vaughn to understand what happens when a parent comes up to him and complains that she feels like she is under house arrest. My second favorite parent was, well, the woman I've come to think of is Frau Burrito. I am very sick, and I cannot judge any more rounds, she said to me. I mean, she literally came up and said that exactly like that. I'm very sick. I've been very sick and weak all morning, and I cannot judge any more rounds. Now, I am a sympathetic guy. And if someone gets sick, I will make allowances. You know, somebody's sick. I'll see what I can do. I'll take you out of the pool. I understand. But if you're going to come up to me and announce that you are very weak and sick, in a very strong German accent, tell me that you came from far away. And while you are doing this, stuffing your face with a burrito, literally, I am very sick and weak, is sort of diminished while you're stuffing burritos into your face. I'm very sick and weak. But I know that I don't have Joe Vaughn's reaction to high dudgeon, but I do react to high dudgeon. So I simply said, okay, well, I'll see what I can do. And walked away. Now, we had a lot of judges, but we didn't have that many judges that if, in fact, you were capable of stuffing your face with burritos, that we were going to be able to let you not judge. So if, in fact, you are a judge and you don't want to judge in the future and you want to come to me and get out of your judging obligation, I'm going to give you a hint. Don't eat burritos while you do it. Speaking of judges, there are all these judges, and they tend to be college kids who are just too good for the room. I'm a very good judge. You will not put me into JV. Now, we respond to this as you would expect. Joe and I, who both have different reactions to high dudgeon, do in fact have the same dudgeon reaction here. Or dudgeon defense mechanism, or whatever it is. So if you come to us and tell us that you're just too good a judge to be, you know, thrown into the JV pool, and you demand to be in the varsity pool, I assure you that you will never judge another varsity round as long as I can remember your name. And I will tell you that I had one judge who I specifically put into the JV pool because, as I think I mentioned at some point, and I think it was in a recording that I actually published, and not the one that I burned, but either way. I mean, I try to make the JV pool as good as possible. I don't want it to be just the rejects from the varsity pool. And so I had put in someone, and you may know this person. I'm going to use his name, Abdul Barate. And I put him into the JV pool. Now, Abdul may be one of the best judges ever. One of the best guys ever. Great educator, been around for a while, knows his job, knows how to work with the kids, knows how to help the kids. He's won awards for his work with the kids. He's not a teacher. As far as I know, he's never actually become a teacher. I put Abdul in the JV pool, and I told him, when I saw him first thing, yeah, Abdul's okay. I actually went to him because he is such a good judge. And he was like, yeah, that's cool. No problem whatsoever. If you are cool with being in the JV pool, if you're a good judge, you're the kind of judge that knows, hey, if I'm in the JV pool, two things. First of all, I'm pretty good. I'm probably going to write some good ballots for these people, so it's going to be a good use of me in terms of teaching and helping these kids along. And secondly, you're going to realize your job is easier. It's a lot easier to judge JV for the most part than it is to judge varsity. Now, you may have a highfalutin idea of your potential as a judge, but if you're such a good judge, why are you limiting yourself to the people who only care whether you pick them up? Do you really think you're that good a judge, that you're that important in the life of these students, that what you say on your ballot about their arguments and how to change this and how to change that and what you would do and all this kind of stuff really matters? No, they just want your points and they want your vote. The JV, they want to know how to do it from somebody who's really good. They want to learn from someone like Abdul, who, by the way, I remember judging him and he was a top-rate debater. They want a top-rate debater to come and tell them how to do it. when they're young and they're willing to listen, not when all they want is to pick up and go to TOC and couldn't care less what you really think. But unfortunately, the world is not filled with Abduls. What can I say? One of my favorite moments was we had some issue, and I'm not quite really sure what this all started with, but I'm sitting there, and someone's on the phone, and it might have been Pam, the pup who was working our table, and or one of the pups, anyhow. There was another one, and I'm sorry, I forget her name. It was an Indian name, and she was also great. I don't want to forget her either. I think it was Shashley, but I'm not quite sure. But anyhow, Pam is there, and she's on the phone, and all I know is the question is asked, well, who is this person? And Joe says, well, either he is a tall, lanky, white guy, or a short, rotund, black guy. And now, how you got to be either one of the other of these was beyond me, but the real point was, any pair of these variables ought to have been enough. He's lanky, he's rotund, he's tall, he's short, he's white, he's black. But perish the thought, we don't like pinpoint whoever this mysterious, nebulous character was with enough traits to separate him from the other person when any one trait would have done the job. I don't know what this was all about, but I do have a sense that the tall, lanky, white guy and the short, rotund, black guy will play a part in many tab rooms to come. Now, at some point, I don't want to just talk about that. We were talking about a judge, the tall, lanky, white, short, rotund, black judge. But there were students who had to be contended with as well. My favorite student of the day was the one who set off the fire alarm. Now, by the time you get to high school, you know better than to do whatever it is that sets off a fire alarm, you know, which essentially means opening the firebox or, you know, hanging your coat on it or hanging your nose on it or your butt on it or whatever it is. But somebody did this, and, well, this speaks for itself. The good news was this happened right at the beginning of a round, and as it turned out, it was there's a two-phase kind of thing on fire alarm, so we didn't actually bring the fire department to the building, or I might still be there. As a matter of fact, we'd all still be there, except for the one kid who we found out who it was because we were standing right next to him practically at the time. That kid would not be here anymore, the one that set off the alarm. He'd be gone. But the rest of us would still be there. Stupid. Now, there was one moment where I'm standing there by the tab room table, and all of a sudden, Vaughn and Jeff go storming down the hallway. I have no idea what this is all about. We'll find them. So anyhow, what this story boils down to is, and as I say, this is coming, I wasn't there, and then next thing you know, I'm like just outside the room, because I'm in the room, but the tab room, but anyhow, like I said, I missed most of the thing, but apparently one of our people, one of the pups, comes up to the table and says, there's people having sex in the bathroom, and they're making a lot of noise while they're doing it. You've got to stop them. And Jeff and Joe went running off to stop them. Now, I don't know about you, but my thought, as I saw them go, first of all, when I saw them go, I didn't really know what they were doing. And I've never seen two guys running down so eagerly to do anything in my life. But second of all, as I found out what it was that they were going to do, my question was, how the hell are they going to do that? Now, as it turned out, apparently, and this is the story that we're living with, was that when our pup discovered this, our pup gave a lot of hidey-hey, hidey-ho, hidey-hoo herself about this whole thing and went screaming down the hallway, there's people having sex in the bathroom, which apparently, if in fact it were true, acted to somewhat inhibit the people who may have been, shall we say, indiscreet in the neighborhood of the bathroom. And by the time Joe and Jeff got there, they were gone. But I just love the image in my mind of what would have happened if they hadn't been gone. But this is a family podcast, and will move along. Now, at some point, the tournament disappeared. Now, those of you who are fans of Yale and were there a couple of years ago before I started working there know that this is known as pulling a Vaughn, because Joe, who at the time admittedly had not been that experienced with the software, did manage to erase I think he managed to erase the tournament. I could be wrong about that. It might have only been, you know, a couple hundred ballots. But in any case, there was a moment where I thought I had done the same thing. Now, I know I hadn't done anything that was, you know, that I had not literally pulled a Vaughn insofar as I knew what he had done, and I hadn't done that. But I had done something, because I assure you I'm staring at a very, very empty screen. And when you're running a tournament, the last thing you wish to look at in your software is an empty screen. I mean, of course, I did have my backups, but you don't back up every 2 seconds. So my backup would have meant entering, well, I guess one division, which is, you know, 80 ballots. That's a bunch of, that'll slow you down. And the good news was I had not pulled a Vaughn, and I was able to, I just repaired the round. I said, well, let me try it. I mean, I looked around. I said, well, the data seems to be here. Everything is right. And I just said, okay, let's pair the round. I clicked the buttons that have the software pair the round, and it paired it fine, and we didn't lose anything. So I guess pulling a Vaughn is losing the material. Pulling a Menick is thinking you lost the material. I assure you the immediate reactions to both are the same. One, however, does prove to be a slightly more undesirable situation than the other. For those of you who wonder why I'm different from Vaughn, aside from the high dudgeon reaction, is I do, of course, back up, and I'm sure Joe backs up nowadays too, but when I back up, there is, and I'm looking at it and holding it in front of the microphone now, this does you no good whatsoever. I do have a pin, a Disney-type pin of Darth Tater on my flash drive, the lanyard for the flash drive. And I maintain that Darth Tater, as the god of debate protection, is the reason that a Menick is not a Vaughn. Now, for Joe and I, definitely, we do believe in the closed door of tab. Inside the tab room, we feel free to say anything we wish to say about anybody. If you're at the tournament, probably we're talking about you, especially if you have been complaining to us or screwing up. And we are vicious, entertaining, but vicious. But it's only on our side of the door. We're very nice on the other side of the door, but that's why we keep the door closed, so that we can close the door behind us and go, oh my God! Anyhow, thanks to the fantastic change in our schedule and a phone call I made to the Ibiza restaurant asking if I could postpone the reservation just a little bit, 9 o'clock. We got there for our dinner and had a great one. Unfortunately, we did have to pair the varsity afterwards, which really just meant, we'd entered all the data and just meant looking at the pairings for the doubles round, which we single flighted it, and looking at those pairings and making sure that it worked and that we didn't have, you know, the wrong balance of judges. I mean, you don't want to have too many, you know, people from Yale or too many people from the same area or whatever. Make sure the blocks take. One of the things the software does not really do well is remember when you've blocked someone. You can block the same people 27 times and they still end up judging that team or that school. You really have to eyeball that one. But anyhow, you know, we ended up, I was back in bed at the very early hour of 1 a.m. and up at 6. So, that, you know, a couple of nights of that will wear you out. No doubt about that. Sunday went pretty well. I mean, because we had speeded up the JV, I mean, JV theoretically would have had doubles, as would varsity. unlikely that we could have had single flights like we did. So we managed to really speed up the tournament. Not only one day, but 2 days, made our lives a lot simpler. But I did notice, and I'm not quite sure why this happened, because you know that I swear by the old version of the software. And we never had any problem with people creeping from one division to another. But by the end of the day, and this started, and I mean the end of the day, we were getting up to semis. The rooms, I put in all the rooms for the semis. Now, by now, I must have had 150, 200 rooms in there, because I just keep adding rooms. Because we had created all the rooms in the high school, and then there were shadow rooms in the high school, and then there were the new rooms in the high school. And, you know, so a lot of rooms. There were the rooms from Friday night, now there's the rooms for Sunday. And I kept entering the data, and it just wasn't taking. I had it right. I mean, it took me a while to sort it out. You know, it was sort of complicated. But, you know, not that complicated. It became sort of a running joke how long it was taking me to sort out the stupid rooms. But I did sort them out. And we did the pairings. We posted them. But everybody is in the same rooms. I mean, the rooms were screwed up. Well, I mean, not everybody in the one division. But what happened was the varsity and the JV were sharing rooms, which you really can't do. You really can't have two rounds going on at the same time, however convenient that may seem to the tab room. So we had that problem, and then I tried to print the room. Okay, I'll print the rooms and sort this problem out, and it wouldn't print the room list. Okay, well, something's wrong with this one little thing. And then we entered data for the next round or two. Probably not the next round or two, maybe the next round. Entered the data, and I entered it, and it was gone. I entered it again, and then go to the screens to say, okay, now we're going to run the next round. And everything I had entered didn't show up. And essentially what happened was the software just got tired and said to me, Jim, we're done. I'm not doing anymore. You're on your own, fella. Now, I've never had the software say this to me. My guess is that it was data overload. Just too many rooms, too many people. And, yeah, I'm a help desk kind of guy. I turn the computer on and off when this stuff happens, when all else fails. Didn't work. Didn't help. It could be my computer. I doubt it. I was running, as you know, on the Dell, not on little Elvis. But I don't know what happened. I've never had this happen before. And it certainly didn't happen last year at Yale, where we had pretty much the same numbers, maybe not quite the same in the rooms, but something happened here. So I'll be trying to figure this one out for a while. Of course, we're certainly backed up. We had everything we needed. We did the last couple of rounds by hand. That's no big deal. You practically do those rounds by hand anyhow, but it was an odd sort of coda to the whole experience. Anyhow, I've gone on for quite some time. That was Yale 2007. I have recommended to some people that they just listen to this one. So if you're one of those people, I appreciate you giving us a listen. And if you're one of the people who listen to all three parts, you are a trooper. You are obviously too cheap to buy audiobooks. And I appreciate your stopping by. And see you at the next tap room.